Tell me about yourself, Carlos. How old are you?
I'm 57 years old.
And tell me about your decision to adopt. Why adopt and why China?
My wife and I, Carmel, we've tried several times to have children, and she had miscarriages. And then our son basically was almost didn't make it. And then after that, we tried again, and she had complications. So we went a few years, and I said, you know what? Why can't we adopt? Let's adopt. You know, we heard about China and about India. So I went to a seminar, and she came with me. She didn't want to come. She didn't think it was a good idea. And I heard this commercial with Oprah International talking about Oprah International adoption. So we went, and I said, it sounds exciting. Let's do it. You know, and she said, you know what? Let's pray about it. And she came to me and said, okay, I think I'm ready. And that's kind of how it all started.
Now, I'll ask her this question, but from your point of view, why was your wife hesitant?
Well, you know, she's had a rough time. You know, we had four miscarriages, and it was just rough. And so she was still, I think she was a little bit angry with God and wasn't sure what she wanted to do. And so I kind of introduced it, you know, slowly. And then the second time I said, you know, let's do it. And she said, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. So that's kind of how it took place.
And why did you choose China? It sounds like you researched various options for adoption. Why did you settle on China?
Well, we thought about, I think it was Korea and India. And then we heard that the Chinese you can get adoption in a year. So we said, and all the other places was 18 months. I think Korea, they would have flown over to the United States. But it was a process, so we wanted to do it the quickest way possible. And when we heard there was 500 children up for adoption, 500,000 children up in China, we were like, you know what, we need to go there. That, you know, that's where we felt that you know, God was pushing us to go, and that's kind of how we did it.
And how did the process go? When you settled on an agency and all that, how was all of that?
You know, I probably should let my wife talk about that part. I will say it was a process, a very lengthy process, a very thorough process. It wasn't cheap, you know, but money wasn't an issue. We decided, I was in the military, by the way. I was close to retirement, and we made the decisions. I had 19 years in, and I'm thinking, you know, should we do it now? Should we wait? But basically, it was very thorough. I thought it was pretty painless. A lot of paperwork. So,
were you in the Army?
I was in the Navy.
Navy. Okay. And so when you, how old was Ivy when she came home?
She was 3.5 years old.
And when was that?
That was in 1996.
What province and orphanage do you remember?
Yiwu.
Yiwu Social Welfare Institute in Zhejiang Province, China.
There you go.
South of Shanghai.
Got it. Thank you. That's what I needed. So 3.5. So she must have been talking a lot.
Actually, no. She only said a few words, and obviously they were all in Chinese. And she, in time, you know, pointed to the refrigerator and wanted water. And so we kind of figured it out. But she didn't speak only, she spoke maybe a handful, maybe 10, 12 words that we got from her.
And were there, what was she like as a 3.5-year-old newly arrived in this new place?
Well, you know, when they came out and gave it to Carmel, she screamed bloody murder for a second. And then she grabbed onto Carmel, latched onto her, and didn't let her go. And then when Carmel gave her to me to hold on, she screamed and basically cried for like 3 months after that. I think I was the first male that she saw. And so it took about 3 months where she started feeling comfortable around me. So it was an experience. I was like helpless, thinking, I don't know what to do here. You know, every time I pick her up, she's crying, you know.
Did you have any idea that might happen? Were you totally surprised by that?
You know, I don't know what to expect. You know, we got the picture, and Carmel can tell you a story behind that in itself, but I didn't know what to expect, so I just kind of went with the flow. And when she cried, I just wanted to console her, so I would give it to Carmel, and she would stop crying. So I just kind of felt bad, thinking, man, do I smell? Well, I mean, what's going on here?
I should actually introduce you to my husband, because it was exactly the same. My daughter was 2. I was like this life raft. She wasn't sure she wanted to be on, but I was it. And my husband and my stepson, who came with us, who was so excited, who was 13, she didn't want anything to do with him either. So I had 2 like mopey men and this perfectly, totally hysterical 2-year-old.
We had our son. He came with us. He was 12. And, you know, he was a trooper. And, you know, going to China, how difficult that was, his long trip. And she played. We have photos, actually, on VHS still when we were there. And Eli, our son, playing with her, you know, when she was obviously we picked her up, but it was an experience, something you can't forget.
And how about in the years since? what surprised you about the whole experience, if anything?
Well, I think when you adopt a child from any place, they don't tell you anything. And when we were there, we had to get a medical checkup to make sure she was healthy and all that, you know. And we got home, and right away, we noticed that she was vitamin D deficient, I think it was. Rickets or something. There was something going on that we had to go in. And she can clarify that. But we found out that she came home, you know, we put food in front of her, and she did not let it go. You know, she was something she did. And then also she kind of became a hoarder with things. She would take things and put them in her room, which I thought was interesting. Again, you know, I didn't know what to expect. You know, our son was totally different. And learning to communicate was difficult, you know, what she wanted when she was not feeling well. And then, you know, she would, she was very active. She would move around a lot. Which, you know, at the time I'm thinking, well, Eli was kind of, you know, I don't know if he was like that. So there were some things that were kind of different. You know, she got older, it got better. She was able to communicate, you know, more and more. And she still didn't speak very, very much. And then one day she started talking and she has not let up since. So
how old was she that day?
You know, I want to say, and again, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I want to say she was about 8 years old. When she started kind of really asking a lot of questions. Before that, she was kind of quiet, going with the flow. In school, you know, she didn't talk much. And I think because she still didn't understand a lot of things. And she's black and white. There's no in between. So, you know, when she says, you know, I went to class one day and the teacher said, I want to cut the cut in half. She asked us, does that mean they're going to cut us in half? So that was one example. Yeah. So.
Oh. Okay, so very, very kind of literal,
yeah,
in the
very
thinking.
Literal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So she's home 4.5 years, almost 5 years, very quiet, kind of, and then all of a sudden the floodgates open.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, now we have to deal with, how do you tell her enough's enough now? Can we talk about that next tomorrow, or can we go see your mom? Because it's just constant. And we noticed that a lot of it was repetitive, just the same thing over and over. And then we noticed, we got to school, we found out, okay, there's some issues going on there that we kind of identified, and we didn't know what they were, you know. So I'll let Carmel talk about this, then begins the new journey from that point on until, you know, today of trying to help her and not knowing what's going on with some issues there. So it's been very, exhausting, mm-hmm. Exhausting, but good. Good, exhausting. And there was a period of time, and you might ask this, but there was a period of time when she was a teenager where we did not get along at all. We had major issues, and that was her trying to discover who she was and discovering that the world is not a very pleasant place to live at times. You know, she's, you know, starting noticing the rejection, realizing that, you know, she's different and she's being treated different. And that was a whole different experience for us. And I'm sure she'll talk about it. Carmel will talk about that.
Did you attribute that awareness to the fact of her adoption, her being, you know, Chinese and in a non-Chinese family, or to the fact that she had these other issues that meant she behaved differently and kids notice that and can be kind of awful about it?
I think the latter part's correct. She, the other things that were going on in her life started to come out. We didn't know what they were. She certainly didn't know what they were. And she wanted to fit in so much. And she started noticing, you know, why I can't do certain things and certain people can. And she started realizing, well, wait a minute, something's not fair here. And that really started, you know, in her, I think, some bitterness and anger. You know, and of course, you know, being in a family, when you love someone, it's safe to lash out on those that you love. And so we didn't know what to expect and what to do. And we've seen so many different people, doctors and professionals, and you know, she can tell you more about that. Carmel can. That's just another piece of the story. But that really, I think, the formulation of change and as a result, we didn't get along very much, and we had to take some actions, which I prefer to talk about. I'll let Carmel talk about that, to try to help her. And in that process, in doing so, there was some healing and there was some hope, I think, to today. So.
And so, where are you with things now? Yourself, how are you feeling about it all?
Well, you know, I think it was 5 years ago. Not knowing. You know, not knowing where this is going, or we didn't have a relationship. Today we do.
You mean you and Ivy?
Yeah, we didn't have a good relationship, and no matter what I did, it was like, you know, what do you do with this? So I learned to pick my fights. I learned to appreciate who she was.
Why does this feel, what about this feel so emotional for you? What is it that it really gets to you when you, because you're crying right now, that when you talk about this?
Is the world's not fair. She's trying to fit in and she can't. And the world has rejected her. So there's only a handful of us who are trying to get around her to show her, you know what? The world can do what they want. But you know what, we don't have to go that way. We don't have to feel that way. We don't have to, there's hope for her. And there's so much going on right now that good things that Cameron can talk about. So I see hope. But 5 years ago, I got a piece about this whole thing saying, you know, I don't understand all this. And no matter where this is going, I'm going to trust God that there's a place for her. And we're going to make that happen, no matter what it is. And that's what we're doing, trying to do right now. So that's kind of where am I today and how I'm feeling. But I'm feeling a lot better than I did many, many years ago. We can sit here for hours and tell you stories upon stories about some of the things we went through. But, you know, I think, and the one thing I will say this, people that adopt, and since you've adopted before, people that adopt have no idea what they're getting. They get a picture, and they get all emotional, and they get this person home, and you want to love them as your own. And then you realize that there's something wrong. And so your thing is, well, I'm going to make this work no matter what. And then you know the world, and I'm so thankful for organizations like the NFAR and other ones that regional that really try to help kids that who are autistic and Asperger's and other things. If we didn't have that, I just don't know where she would be here. I don't know where she would be. I mean, it would be very difficult. So there is hope, and it's a really difficult thing out there for people that adopt not knowing, and they're probably going through the same thing we have, and I don't know where they're at in the world, where if they have support, like we're getting support. California has really good support for people that adopt kids that have autistic, Asperger's, and other types of special needs. So I will say that. So I think the difficulty is for us parents not knowing how to cope with that, with those issues, because, you know, it's like a totally new thing. And, you know, I will tell you this, and this is kind of a funny thing. We've seen so many doctors, and most of them would ask us, okay, so they'll put her aside while she's playing. All right, Carlos and Carmel, so tell me what drugs are you on? I says, what do you mean? He says, well, tell us what you're taking. How are you coping? I says, well, you know, we're spiritual. We believe in God, and God given us the faith and all that stuff. He says, well, no. Are you taking Valium? No. Are you taking these things? And she says, you know, most families that come here are on something because they don't know how to deal. And so we're so thankful that we haven't gone there. You know, and maybe that's why it's been so hard. But it's just interesting the difficulty out there that most parents go through. You have to have a separate support group for the parents, I think, when you have, you know, people like Ivy who's coming here and special needs and learning all this, you know, and how do you cope. But I will say that she's in a better place. She's doing wonderful. You know, she's hopefully going to get a job here real soon. So she's on a fast track to do well. And we're so excited about that.
Is there anything that you would want to say to other parents, adoptive parents, or people who are contemplating adoption based on the experience that you've had?
I would say go for it. I would not change my mind. I wouldn't change anything. Because, you know, I believe, you know, if you're people of faith, I believe that God gave us her because we could handle the situation. So I believe if you love somebody, if you want to give love to someone, you know, because you can't, you know, go for it. It's just we're doing, I always wonder, you know, what happened if we didn't adopt her? You know, and we have a video, and they'll share this with you, that where we found her, they did this tour to the orphanages, and by year, and we said 1995, so we looked at it, and lo and behold, we saw her in this video when she was a baby. It's just wonderful to see that, you know, the fact that a year later we went and adopted her.
So that was just by accident that you tripped over this video?
She is part of...
families with children from China.
And she's communicating, and apparently there had been this group that would go to China every year to the orphanage. And at the time we were there, we were not allowed to go there. So they opened it up, apparently, or they did special permission. So we found out about this, And what's his name? Roger, what's his name?
Ralph.
Sent this email, says the CD, and it's about the visits. And we're going down, you know, 1999. And I told Carmel, I said, you know, it'd be nice if we had one in 1995, because that would be the year before we picked her up. And sure enough, the very last one was 1995. And we clicked on that, and we were just blown away when we saw her with the kids in that group the year before we adopted her. I mean, so anyway, so that was really amazing.
It sort of has that meant to be quality too.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think there's a lot of things that happen with this adoption that are certainly out of our control. You know, even before we adopted her, there were certain things that happened that we felt that this was meant to be.